back with episode 788 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host. Tonight we have
Gary from Jacksonville, and boy, do we have a lot of shows to talk about this week.
Oh, yes, we do, and this is going to be the first of two episodes covering a couple weeks' worth of episodic content. There is a ton of shows on the air right now, and we are trying to cover what we can of those, but of course, as we've mentioned before, we really can't get into everything anymore. There's just way too much out there, but we are going to try and hit some highlights and perhaps lowlights as we go along. But before we do any of that, Gary, if you could give a disclaimer.
Well, at this point, it's been a few weeks, so we hope you've had time to watch these shows. But if you haven't, we're going to reveal every twist and turn of every story because we think it's all really cool and we want to talk about it. So we hope you enjoy our discussions. And while we're not necessarily apologizing, if you are spoiled and some secret is revealed ahead of time, I feel bad for you. And let's get on with the show.
That's right. All right. What we're going to do here is start off with... as usual, what we do is we get into the shows that are at the top and bottom of the list, and we're going to get into the bottom three. And why don't you go ahead, Gary, and do the first one for us here? This one coming in at an average of 7.25.
Yes, we're, I'm sorry to see this, but it really deserved it. We're talking about Supergirl Season 2, Episode 14, Homecoming. Alex and Kara are thrilled to have their father, Jeremiah Danvers, back after he's rescued from Cadmus, but questions about his loyalty remain.
And, yep, 7.25. And, what'd you think about this one?
I have to say, I was... just as confounded as several other people, as Mon-El was in this episode, wondering, wait a minute, he's been working with the people who have just tried to kill us and blow up cities for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and he's been working with them for the last 15 years, or at least 10 years, and we're going to let him walk around our secret headquarters unguarded with full computer access and all sorts of other things? Well, yeah, of course we are. What are you thinking? The incredibility of that one thing pretty much tainted this whole episode for me, because Mon-El was 100% right, as we saw as the episode unfolded. And I felt that Alex was really giving Kara a lot of crap for what turned out to be, you know, no reason.
For all intents and purposes.
And then she still gave her a nose up at the end anyway, that, oh, you didn't have faith in Dad.
Who would?
I'm just like...
That's the thing, is that it made no sense whatsoever, and actually what really bothered me is exactly what you're talking about, where you get... you've got all these characters that are making these decisions that make no sense or really naive just in order to make sure that the episode can keep going. And that disappoints me when that happens. I mean, it's really not necessary. I understand it's a comic book show, but...
Well, I mean, they could have had him sneak away from a handler, or actually knock the handler out, or, you know, disable some tracking device that's on him, put on his person, or, you know, a bunch of different things instead of going that route. And it was just frustrating that the writers didn't put more work into the story, because I would think that they would have seen that it was rather shallow to take that route with it. And then, you know, and then the trope of Alex and Kara playing off each other. I love Dad more than you do. And mm-hmm. was just, you know, sad. We've seen Kara's dedication to her father, I think, for several episodes as he's talked about and discussed and things. So, you know, she has nothing but the highest of regard for the man. And, you know, to call her like that, I think was, you know, a little cheap on Alex's part. And almost out of character. They seem to wax that character all over the place. She goes from strong, independent woman to wet mop within an episode. And it's just I wish they would cast her more consistently. Write her more consistently, yes. Would be a better way. Because I think she can be a great character at times, but they're not running her consistently enough to make it happen. And, you know, they're using her as a device for a lot of things, I think. And, I don't have a problem with that, but just, you know, keep it consistent is all I want.
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem that I have with this episode is the inconsistency of the characters. That's for sure. All right, next we have The Flash, Season 3, Episode 14, Attack on Central City. Grodd and his army of gorillas bring the battle to Earth-1, but The Flash and his team try to stop them before they destroy Central City. And this came in at an average of 6.75, so that really worked out. Gary, you.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I know I didn't like it, but I was trying to figure out where my biggest sort of point of contention was. And honestly, I don't feel like I get enough villain interaction for this show. Most of the villains for this show are pretty much up close and personal. You know, there's either, you know, a very active vendetta, a personal score to settle, or a personal wrong to be righted. You always seem to get a lot of conversation between Barry and the antagonist, but these Grodd ones that doesn't seem to happen as much. You'll get a little bit, but nothing like we do for anyone else. And maybe that's a limitation of the CGI that they have to do for Grodd, and so they can't have that sort as much dialogue going on between the two characters because it's hard to coordinate. But it seemed poor. We get this. They're preparing for the attack, and they're deciding where to meet him, and then he doesn't show up there at all, even though the future newspaper predicted it. And it just so the future, I guess, isn't written, even though we are going through the whole season like it is, and so it's contradicting itself. It's just a very weak episode. Flash is not an army villain show to do.
It really isn't, and that's the biggest problem with this episode and really this season so far, is that I feel like they've written themselves into all these little corners, and they're trying desperately to get out of them, and I'm sorry, but CGI gorillas is not the way to do it.
Now, don't get me wrong, Grodd is a classic Flash villain, but he's rarely used with an army, and quite frankly, he's honestly typically a little too pompous a character to do it. He's a character that's very full of himself and his abilities, and he's usually fine going one-on-one against the Flash. You know, to bring armies in with him seems a little bit much, and the whole what's the character's her name, the female vibe, her name is, do you remember what her code name is?
Gypsy?
Yes, Gypsy. Okay. To use Gypsy as this conduit to get around getting into Earth One just seemed a little hokey, if you asked me. I would have rather had Grodd figure out a way to do it than have her just happen to be on that Earth apprehending yet another person traveling through the dimensions that needs to be brought back home to get killed. Which they didn't mention that part.
Yeah, it was disappointing. And
but I do like seeing Gypsy and Vibe together. That, you know,
yeah, they are cute.
That's very, yes.
They are cute. I will agree with that.
So that pulled it up a half a point for me. So.
Yeah, I guess I mean I gave it an average 7, so yeah. I didn't give it anything less than you did, but it really, Grodd doesn't do anything for me. I felt like people were giving HR way too much of a hard time for really no reason. He wasn't being any more of a jerk or over the top than usual.
Well, do you think it's because Wells is there?
Maybe that was it, that they wanted to try and, like.
Well, I was thinking, like, oh, it's irritating when we can actually have somebody here we know that'll help us with these problems, and instead we have you.
Yeah.
Gosh, if only we had him back. He may be a little annoying, but at least he could do amazing things. You decorate for Friendship Day.
Yeah. It was that really so bad to do that? I mean, it just... I don't know if they were trying to contrast Wells against everything else, but it just felt like, wow. Why don't you just send the guy packing or just, like... You already spit toothpaste in his coffee. Why don't you just, like...
Oh, wasn't that a nice scene? That was a fun scene.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
It made me realize how much I miss Wells.
right, yeah.
that's sarcasm, it's nice.
Yeah. It's interesting because, actually, you mentioned that because... my son right now has been binge watching, because he has that cold and has been sick. He has binge watched the first season and a half of The Flash. So I'm now getting to see Wells back, you know, Harry back when he was originally brought in, which is kind of interesting, actually.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. And then you have the whole Jesse staying on Earth, not staying on Earth. That's a...
Yep. back and forth. The Flash just seems to be losing a little bit of its mojo, and maybe that's why I feel like the book that I'm reading for the Flash, it feels more like what the show should be than what the show is right now. They've just really started to flail a lot, at least in my mind.
Well, they don't
need to kind of get their center again somehow.
They don't have that driving storyline that the first or second season was. So you know, there's not that wrong to be righted, that criminal to be paid back for what he's done, and so. But then they tried that again, and it sort of fell flat the second time, if I recall correctly. So
yes,
can't win sometimes, but I think that's sort of Flash's story, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about the Flash shortly. Finally, down here at the bottom of the list is... give me 1 second, as it's frozen on me. How nice.
And I thought you said you weren't going to watch the show anymore.
Well, I was sick. It's 24 Legacy, and if you just give me a moment for this to catch up... I will go ahead and read it. There we go. Okay. 24 Legacy, Season 10, Episode 5, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Carter and Grimes meet the leader of a smuggling ring to propose a deal to find the location of the terrorists. And I gave it a 6.5 because, yeah, it's really still on the edge for me. It is just, especially this episode, it was just felt like it was spinning its wheels for like the third episode in a week. And I know a lot of people that were getting very frustrated with this episode, because there are a couple times where, especially if something is down towards the bottom of my list, I do go and I'll read other reviews just to see, am I
missing something?
Something, right? It just... it seems like more often than not...
You're not.
I'm not missing anything. Yeah, exactly. I was trying to think of the words. So, 24 Legacy just not really doing it for me right now, at least the week that that particular episode came out. That brings us to our top three, then. These are episodes that we definitely had a much better time with. And, Gary, why don't you go ahead and take number three for this week?
Number three. Okay, number three is The Expanse.
Number three for this week would be... I think.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh gosh, my goodness. Yes, my little guilty pleasure. We're talking, of course, about
Star Wars Rebels. Actually. I think we're having still technical difficulties. Okay, let's see here.
Darn these grading things. I'm going to take the person out back who fills them in and take care of them.
That's right.
Anyway, what we're really talking about is the third highest show for this week, Star Wars Rebels, Season 3, Episode 17, Through Imperial Eyes. The rebels fear the identity of a rebel spy will soon be discovered by the Empire, so they launch a plan to rescue him before he is caught. This came in with an 8.75, and I liked it a lot. This is what they're talking about, of course, is that the secret rebel agent known as Fulcrum, which is the Imperial officer that we've been familiar with for a while, they basically get captured so that they can go in and sneak him out. And during the course of it, there's a really nice twist where the agent basically frames somebody else. But since this is Admiral Thrawn's ship, Thrawn sort of was watching the whole thing and realized that that our lovely Imperial agent did mastermind the whole thing. And it looks like he's getting ready to set him up. So it was a nice little twist on it. It again shows... Thrawn's strength for playing the long game, and I'm looking forward to what's going to be devised to really get Agent Kallus caught, because in a sense it's pretty much already known he's caught, because the person he framed was somewhat incompetent and could not do what this rebel spy is accused of doing. So it's nice to see. Well, I don't want to say that see the Empire win, but it's nice to see that they're not totally clueless fools either. So, like I said, it was well done, and Ezra, I thought, did a good job there. You know, as they continue to play him slightly older and older with more responsibility, he's coming across very well as a character for me, and I think it worked out well. Kallus's Agent Callis's pompousness, I guess, or sort of overconfidence in himself, seemed a little blatant in this episode. But like I said, the twist to frame somebody else was unexpected, and I thought they were actually going to liberate him out. So instead, we will get at least a minimum of one more Thrawn episode because he's going to have something set up. So that definitely is a good thing, and I'm looking forward to it. Did the twist take you by surprise, John?
It did. And that's one of the things that I felt was fairly impressive about this episode, was that it really showed Thrawn's, his insight, right? Because some of the episodes where they've shown him being, you know, super intuitive and reflective have relied on making the characters do things very foolishly in order to allow him to have that upper hand. This actually was him being intelligent. He did the whole thing where he was using the artwork, which is a hallmark of his character. I really liked that. And I also like the fact that this is highlighting for what, for me, is one of the problems with the current state of the rebellion, is that... How do I put this? There are limitations to the show, even though it's animation and so forth. They've got all these little cells that are always running into the same people, and it's like you've got the same four or five people that are trying to do infiltration jobs. Sooner or later, it's pretty obvious that they're going to leave some kind of hints about their identity. And how many times do they capture Ezra or Hera or Speed before they realize, like, wait, we've seen this guy before? Like, several times.
No, he's wearing a different helmet, Chuck.
Oh, he's... Yeah, he's
helmet. That's... But yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Right? Because that's what I was expecting. Is like, no wonder Thrawn... You know, granted, he did do some good things there, but... you know, it's... even so, it was like, wow, yeah, this is starting to really expose the fact that these guys are not going to... Are not going to be able to keep doing this. Forever. Let's put it that way. And I like the fact that the history that they have with the same people over and over again is actually starting to become a factor in the story, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So, yeah, definitely makes sense for this to be
in our top three.
In our top three, yes. That's the words I'm looking for. All right, that means that we are up to our number two show for the week, and that would be Riverdale, Season 1, Episode 5, Heart of Darkness. The Blossom family prepares for Jason's funeral, but do so with a secret agenda in mind. Archie sacks football after an opportunity to work with a new music mentor arises. Betty intensifies her investigation into Jason's death and uncovers unsettling revelations about her family. And this also came in at an average of 8.75. Gary, you gave this a 9.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. I liked the idea that we're continuing to get this mystery about the Blossoms and Jason and his family and all its interconnections. The web, so to speak, is spreading out for the story in several different directions, some of which you can see, some of which take you by surprise. I enjoy the idea of Archie reaching out to the Pussycats, or at least some of them, to work out this calling he has. Betty does come from, I guess, a journalistic family, so the idea that she can be investigative, she's the reporter for the school newspaper, and definitely has hopefully a touch and not too much of her mother's mother in her, where she does like to, you know, dig into stories and stuff like that, and I think she's doing a really good job doing so. So I really sort of like this mystery. Just when you start to figure out the whole Jason Blossom issue, it seems to take another turn. So it's almost like a roller coaster. Okay, I know where I'm going. Whoa, wait a second. It just pulled a right-hand turn. You don't know where you're going with it, and they keep throwing these things at you. And the darndest part about it is it all sort of fits together as they do it. It's not even something that is impossible to believe. They keep meshing it together. Obviously, they've laid this season out very well before they started filming, because the effortless way that these different pieces seem to fit together so well, you know, definitely to me strikes as pre-planning. I don't think they're making this up on the fly, do you?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that they actually know exactly what they're doing, and they're doing a really nice job of plotting this out little piece by little piece. And yeah, it just it's a surprising show. I mean, I think that this one is. I probably have more to say about the next one, but this one for sure, I have to say, it really does a great job of showing, like, take all these different shows that we all love as cult classics and just pull them together and mix them with Archie. And somehow it works. It's really kind of surprising to me that it has worked as well as it has.
Yeah, it's got a touch of Dallas, a touch of Twin Peaks. I'm trying to think what else.
Veronica Mars, I noticed before. Oh, yeah. There's some other shows that have been on the CW and so forth where they're taking it and they're kind of putting it on its head. People have pulled out shows like Pretty Little Liars and things like that, and they're saying like, oh yeah, it's got a little bit of that DNA in there, and then they're taking the best of all these other shows that have gotten their little following and they're putting a spin on it. And then they're adding this comic book stuff into it. So, yeah, it's really doing so much that I didn't think that it would do.
And at no point do I feel that they've robbed or converted or, like, done something to the origin of this. You know, before this show opened up, yeah, I think it definitely was exactly like the comic books. But now that as the show opens, everything starts changing. But up to that point, I don't feel they invalidated anything. They didn't take anything from that somebody might have known who Archie was up to this point and drastically changed it.
Yeah.
So it's nice, sort of the starting point for the series was where sort of everyone would be familiar with the characters, and then it goes from there. So they didn't take away from any character, but we're just growing through it, which is nice. They didn't radically change. They didn't make Betty a guy decide that Jughead's really the family dog or anything crazy like that.
Yeah, they're not doing any of those kinds, thank God. But they are doing smart things, and they are still finding ways to touch on the whole Archie background. I mean, there's things that are recognizable, and that's the thing that I find really impressive. So let's see here. I think that we've talked about this episode pretty well, but yeah. I just continue to say, Riverdale, if you're not watching it, give it a shot. It's not what you think at all. So that brings us to our number one show for the week. And Gary, if you don't mind just reading it out real quick.
Yes, absolutely. Right where I left off at the beginning. Yes. We're now talking about The Expanse. Season 2, Episode 5, Home. The Rocinante chases an asteroid as it hurtles towards the Earth. This came in at a 9.25, with John giving it a 9.5. This must have hit just about every button you needed it to, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Now yes, we're in season two, but we're finally getting to the end of the first arc of the storyline, if I recall correctly.
Yes. What this show has done, and it's a little bit surprising, is that they took the first book and instead of trying to cram it into one season, they basically came along and said, hey, let's give this the time that it needs. If it needs a season, fine. If it needs a little more than that, great. They found a story beat that was kind of two-thirds of the way through the first book and said, we can make a finale out of this. And as someone who hasn't read the books, I was stunned that that was the case. I thought that that was the end of the first book because I would have, it was such a good ending for that first season. So, yeah, for them to then come along and to find out that they basically took the third act of the first book and, put it into the first half of the season, it made it so intense. And it has been so intense. And this would have been the episode that was the finale. So it feels like a season finale for so many good reasons. And, yeah, this was a really good, just solid episode. I can't say enough good things about it. So I'll let Edmund's comments kind of come in here. I think that he, as a book reader, took a little bit off of it compared to me, and this may be the difference for some people, too. He says, giving it a 9, so it's not exactly a huge problem here. While I understood time constraints played into it, Miller pushing her so quickly and explicitly towards Venus lacked the far more subtle psychic dance that played out in the book. Otherwise, that final embrace was beautifully done. So, yeah, he also felt... Again, maybe that's one of those situations where when you know when you know the source material so well, it can kind of detract.
Yeah, well, you know, a TV show can rarely capture 100% of a book.
Yeah.
So, because after all, it's easy for a writer to talk about the millions of ships rushing through the sky, but then CGI has to do it. It's not always as easy.
Yeah, but I got to say that as a... For someone who hasn't read the books, and that people were saying, you know, definitely give it a little bit of time to get a sense of all of the pieces that are in play. This show is right now one of my favorite shows on TV. I can't say that I watch it live because I actually wait until the digital versions are available because they are the uncensored versions. It's a lot more fun. It wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't feel right for the characters to be holding back language-wise. And that's why I feel like it actually really makes sense for this show to be shown in the uncensored versions online, at least. But yeah, this is definitely up at the very top of the list for a reason. And it has a lot to do with the fact that it felt like a season finale. I think that it just brought a lot together. But a lot of shows would love to have a second season as solid as this one is for The Expanse. So let's see. That is our... we did the bottom three. We did the top three. Now we have some of the shows that are in the middle. And Gary, what's one that you would like to talk about here?
Let's talk about what's going on in the Alexandria neighborhoods.
Yes. Let us go down to The Walking Dead. And this is The Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 11. Hostiles and Calamities. Come on. There we go. An Alexandrian must navigate the mysterious world within the Savior's compound. And this episode had an average of 7.83. And Gary, since you want to talk about this one, what were your thoughts about this? This is the, for those who maybe did not get it from the recap there, this is the episode that focused on Eugene.
Yeah, and I like that I had a sense that Eugene was being played even a little bit smarter than normal. Not that there aren't social issues and that type of thing with him, but he seemed to come across as more intelligent in this. And it was nice to, I guess, see almost a different side of the Saviors in some extent. They really were not they weren't torturing Eugene the way they were Daryl, or threatening the snot out of him the way that they were with our other cast members. They need him. They realize he has a tremendous amount of information, and they were treating him very nicely. And it's probably the nicest he's been treated now since the disaster happened. Everybody sort of looked down on him a little bit, obviously, because he was not a fighter and he's not particularly brave or strong, and is broken, cries very often, and is quite emotional. So he was being pampered. And at the same time, we start to see, as I said, how intelligent he is. He realized that he was getting played for the sleeping pills, and he realized that, you know, I think he has a true sense of how that society focuses, and he's decided that, you know, all he has to do is basically be himself and perhaps just a little tougher, and he will lead a very comfortable life. And does not want to be a fighter. He doesn't want to stand up for the good cause. If he has a nice bed to sleep in every night and clean clothes and good food, he's just happy. And maybe that's part of what they're trying to put across to us, that there is a bigger message that, you know, as Negan sometimes, you know, sort of mentions, you know, they have security, they have protection. And for some people, that's enough. And I think in Eugene's case, while, you know, he professes, you know, he is Negan, da-da-da-da-da-da, he should have been here he knew he was here even before he got here, or some stuff like that. But I think it just shows that, you know, he just wants to be taken care of. And if the price he has to pay is to live in that world, so be it. It's a little bit of social commentary too. I don't discount, but I feel that's the sense. I still don't think he's necessarily that allegiant to Negan, but he likes the soft life and will bend some of his own morals to do so. What do you think? Were you? I know some people said, "Oh, that no good traitor." Da 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 da. I won't disagree that he's somewhat traitorous, but at the same time, I think he's just looking out for himself.
Maybe he is. There's two sides to that. I think that number one, the timing of this episode was such that it took what was a good amount of momentum and kind of killed it. It was really slow.
Yes.
Which didn't help. But I'm not entirely 100% convinced that Eugene isn't playing a long game here. And the reason I feel that way is that they referred to some of his previous examples of spinning a lie or misrepresenting himself, and they really didn't need to.
Okay.
So I'm thinking to myself, why would they tell us that? And the answer that I got or that I came to was, Eugene maybe really, while he is being honest about how he feels about, you know, he wants to be protected and so forth, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not loyal still to Rick, that he's not playing the saviors or playing Negan. He's just putting, you know, the best lie is hidden within the truth kind of situation.
Hmm.
So I'm just kind of letting that kind of sit in the back of my mind, because Eugene right now, what he's doing is, here we go again with the source material sometimes being a hindrance perhaps, but what he's doing right now is so different than what happens with him in the source material that I'm wondering if it's just they're taking a different path to get to the same end. So, I did watch this one over again because I watched it initially and then I watched it with somebody else. And the second time around, it wasn't quite as egregious in terms of the pacing. But boy, was it a slowdown for what they had before. And I think that if you didn't like Eugene before and you weren't willing to be sympathetic before, you're definitely not going to feel sympathetic now.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
But yeah, I mean, The Walking Dead right now is, it's not having quite the season that it did last time. It's still decent, but yeah, boy, they needed to keep the intensity up. It's definitely not nearly the intensity that we're seeing from, say, The Expanse. And when The Walking Dead is in the middle of the pack and you've got shows like Riverdale basically showing it up, that's saying a lot. I would like to talk about Legion, Season 1, Episode 3, Chapter 3, A Threat Looms as David Searches for Answers. Yeah, okay. This one came in at an average of 8.17, excuse me. And I'm curious if this particular episode jumps out at you or not, or what your thoughts are at least early on here with Legion, or let me just see where Legion shows up in the, I mean, let's just talk a little bit about Legion. We even can kind of talk a little bit about the next episode as well, because it's not in the top three. Ah, spoilers, ha! But yeah, right now, Legion, your thoughts?
I like this sort of alternate group that he's with or appears to be going with. It seems interesting. And I mean, they're still trying to lay out a lot of, I don't want to say his world because it's sort of all in his head, but I guess we're still getting more of his concept of things. And it's hard to necessarily jive with, you know, what's going on. I get his his reality versus his history, and they're doing it in a very creative way, but it's almost hard to track sometimes of what he's imagining versus what really happened. And I wonder if they're leaving it up to us to figure it out, or at some point will all be laid out, because I'm not quite sure what's the truth, and I know it's intentional.
It is really intentional, and boy, that's one of the things that I think you said before. You know, why even make the reference to the X-Men? Because at this point, what's the connection? We don't even know what kind of narrator David is, let alone anything else.
Yeah. So It's interesting. It's I'll say avant-garde the way that they're doing it. It definitely is not a traditional story approach. The some of these special effects that they continue to use are very entertaining, and I honestly think the show's going to stay this way. I don't think it's ever going to come out of that sort of quasi almost seeing it through his mind's eye type of approach. I think the whole series is going to go that way at this point. If we haven't moved off that focus by episode three, then I don't see that happening. So it's an interesting, almost first person viewing of his, of what's going on with him. So it's a nice little story trope, honestly, to set it up that way and to continue to move forward with that way. And I can see where it might not draw in a lot of people. I'm not sure what the ratings are, but it's definitely different from what we're used to. And so I'm willing to hang on a little bit. I wish the supporting characters were given a little bit more detail. I'm not saying we haven't gotten some, but I really feel like this, to a large extent, is still a one-man show. And the rest of the people are almost like set dressing. So what do you think? I would definitely not call this an ensemble piece.
I don't know what kind of piece you'd call it. That's what I like about it. It's like nothing else I'm watching right now.
Well, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it is definitely out of the ordinary.
It is. And you definitely have, I'm trying to think, because it is kind of an ensemble piece, but at the end of the day, it's all reflections of the same character. So is it? I don't know. It leaves me just a little confused. Let's see. I guess that for me, what I like about this is that like what we're struggling right now to kind of categorize it, and that's what I like about it. To me, Wednesday night right now is just an amazing collection of shows. I mean, you've got Arrow for the DCW, right? You've got the 100, which is always a really great show. And it's really doing great this season. You've got Legion, you've got The Expanse, you've got The Magicians, which is another show that is always towards the top of my list. Wednesdays right now are really hitting the spot. But Legion is definitely one like The Expanse where I really just, I have to sit, give myself that hour to sit down with the best possible version of it and just let it happen. And enjoy.
Oh, yeah, it's not one you can casually watch, yes.
Yeah, there's no way that you can watch Legion without paying full attention to it.
And even then, it's kind of, at least for me, it's kind of tricky.
Yeah.
I'll go back and rewind. Wait, what did I just see?
Yeah, but, you do have to rewind quite a few times because there is little stuff hidden in there.
But I mean, I'm okay with that. I enjoy, like you said, I enjoy the non-traditional storytelling. It's a nice change, so. I'm not saying I'd want to watch five shows like it, but one is great.
Yes, I think that that's very true. I think that it's one of those things where every week you get your little dose of a very different type of storytelling, and it's fun and it's unique. And like you said, if everybody tried to be this way, it would really take away from the impact of it. And the fact that it is only 8 episodes this first season. I hope they stick to that. I hope they don't try to make longer seasons. I hope that they do little arcs like this and give you this dose of insanity and then go ahead and let it kind of linger and then wait for the next season to give you another dose and then just go along. No need to try to overdo it, right? The example that I would give as we wrap up this particular episode, the example I would give is Twin Peaks. And it's why I have a slight bit, if it wasn't for the fact that David Lynch was really curating this entire 18-episode season, I'd be very worried. But, you know, you watch the first season of Twin Peaks, and it was something that was put together as a package almost. And that first season is pretty consistent. It's got a lot of different layers to it. Everybody's, you know, at the top of their game. Then they get to the second season, they try to expand it, and they lose a lot of that layering and they lose a lot of that focus and it's just an inferior product. It has moments of greatness, but it's not nearly the show that it was the first season, right?
Yes.
And I feel like that would be the mistake that Legion would make if they tried to overextend the length of their season. Stick with the 8 episodes and then come back and do it again, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I I haven't heard any talk about them expanding it, so at this point I'd say they're certainly not going to go back with probably at least 6 episodes in the can and add extra. I don't think so.
No.
I think you'll get your wish.
Yeah, could you imagine if they say, oh, we've given you a couple new episodes? It's like, what? How are we supposed to do that?
That's great. We'll love to do a 10-episode season next year. No.
Tell us well ahead of time. We need to be able to do this right. Okay, what we're going to go ahead and do is just very quickly go down the rest of the list here, just to round out this week. Colony, Season 2, Episode 7, Free Radicals, got an 8.5. Humans, Season 2, Episode 3, also got an 8.5. The Magicians, Season 2, Episode 5, Cheat Day, got an 8. Supernatural, Season 12, Episode 13, Family Feud, got an 8. The Vampire Diaries, Season 8, Episode 14, It's Been a Hell of a Ride, got an 8. And Black Sails, Season 4, Episode 5, 33, also got an 8. So those are our above-average shows. A little bit lower is Arrow, Season 5, Episode 14, The Sin Eater, which got a 7.75. The 100, Season 4, Episode 4, A Lie Guarded, got a 7.5. Sleepy Hollow, Season 4, Episode 8, Sick Burn, got a 7.5. And finally, Grimm, Season 6, Episode 8, The Sun Also Rises, got a 7.25. So, in a tie with our one of our bottom three episodes for the week. All right, when we come back next time, we're going to catch up a little bit further with another week's worth of episodic discussion, so stay tuned for that. Until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.